My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 17th, 1981. And I want to thank God and AA and some great sponsors for helping me with that deal. Tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about step five. I don't know if this will be step five at all, but you know, it's something that's on my heart that I want to share with you. And, you know, you're going to get out of it what you get out of it. I don't know. What do you think? It's like I don't know how many people are in here. 100 people? Whatever. So there's 100, what? If there's 250 people, then there's 250 different meetings going on. Right? You know, 250 people hearing, maybe getting something out of 250 different parts of my story, and 80% of that getting stuff out of my story that I'm not even saying. True. You know, that's the way it works. It's the old chicken on the roof thing. I'm not going to do chicken on the roof tonight, but that's, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, how many times have I had people come up to me and tell me, I'll never forget that meeting you did. It changed my life where you said this and I didn't say that. I take credit for it anyway, you know. I mean, I sort of somehow, I'm an alcoholic, I figured myself into it, you know. T.S. Eliot had this line. It says, we will not cease our exploration, and when we are finally finished our exploration, our exploring, we will come to the place where we began, having known the place for the first time. And you know that line I was talking about on page 96 of Dr. Bob, a good old timer, where they talked about in the first 4 years of AA, before they had the big book, when they were just studying the Holy Bible, the good book they called it, and the parts that they really loved out of that was Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, the James, the book of James, and Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5, 6, and 7. If you read those deals, you're going to see a great connection between what we do in AA and what that they talk about there. But, you know, one of my favorite chapters is chapter 1, 1 Corinthians 13, chapter 13, called the love chapter, where it says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things. I put away childish toys. It says, we see through a glass darkly. Last week we were talking about the fourth step. We were talking about which has to do with discernment and prophecy. You know, I mean, if you want to give it biblical terms, it has to do with being able to see things clearly. Being able to see things clearly. You know, it's like if you look at the world that we're living in as a giant room just with a lot of furniture around. A lot of furniture. Human beings. Just furniture all over the place. And somebody turns off the light, all you're doing is tripping over the furniture. And slowly, you know, think about when you first came in here. You know, how many people came in here because they wanted to stop drinking? That's why I came in. I mean, there are people who come here not to stop drinking, like for the coffee or something. Okay, now I want you to think about this. How many people came in here to stop drinking? You can raise your hands. It's okay, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to tell anybody. You know, you remember, does anybody remember there was a time that you said to yourself, I actually said it out loud. I need help. I can't stop drinking. I said that to you. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I looked at a man and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. Did anybody ever say that or think that or even think to themselves, I need help. I can't stop drinking? Okay. You sort of like remember around when you said that? Now, let me guess. This is just a guess. I'm not taking your inventory. But I'm going to guess that when you said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. When you realized, I need help. I can't stop drinking. I'm going to guess that you needed that help and you couldn't stop drinking because that's exactly when you developed the disease. I mean, in other words, I'm going to suggest to you that it's possible that you needed help because you couldn't stop drinking like a year or two or three or five before then. You understand what I'm saying? Like this wasn't a thing like all of a sudden it came upon you like a 24-hour flu and said, holy shit, I think I've got this thing. I need help. I can't stop drinking. This was like one of these deals like you might have had this like for a few months. You know, do you think it's possible? You know, some of you have done your four step and you've spoken to your sponsors, your head cleared up, and you realize, holy crap, I was an alcoholic way before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, would I be correct in that?
Yeah.
So in other words, some of you even got to the point where you said, you know, I ruined the marriage, I ruined my children, I ruined the job, I ruined my life because I couldn't stop drinking, and I didn't even realize I was doing this while I was doing it. And now you realize, so some of you, here's what happened. You had the disease, you had the alcoholism, you had the problem for years. And you weren't drunk all the time. You were sober most of the time. I mean, physically sober. You went to psychiatrists. You sat around with other people trying to figure out, why do I feel so bad? You know, what's wrong with me? You tried to figure this thing out with every possible device you could figure it out. And the more you tried to figure it out, the worse it got. And you didn't have a clue it had anything to do with drinking. As a matter of fact, if somebody came up to you and said, you know, I think you have a drinking problem, you'd get mad. You'd tell them to go to hell. That couldn't be the problem. So, if I understand correctly, one day, maybe a day when you were doing as little thinking as possible as to what's wrong with me, maybe a day when it was so bad for you, and you had gotten so down that you were done with all your thinking, maybe a time in your life where things had gotten so wretched for you, where there was no longer any way of figuring anything out, you were just beat and tired, all of a sudden, it came to you, almost like inspirational thinking, like they talk about, in the, who knows how it came to you. In a sense, you sort of think that it was your idea, but then again, how could it be your idea? You know, you hadn't had a bright idea in years. And now, when you're least able to think, all of a sudden it came to you, all of a sudden this thought comes to you, out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. You know, it says in the big book, when it talks about step 11, it says, inspirational thinking. It says, it seems strange. We don't strain or anything. It just comes. He says, we come to rely upon it. A different type of thinking. Not rational thinking. Not logical thinking. You know, logical thinking that tells us there is no God. It's all about money and all sorts. But some sort of weird sort of type of thinking. We call it inspirational thinking that has nothing to do with 2 + 2. But because of that way of thinking, everything makes sense. And all of a sudden, it's like somebody flicked on the lights, and you can see all the furniture. And you had nothing to do with it. So here's what happens. A point comes in your life where all of a sudden, as bad as it is, a thought comes. And here's the thought. It sounds like this. I can't stop drinking. I need help. Who knows where that thought comes from? You know, I've got my own suspicion on that. And because of that thought, That one discernment, it's a discernment, that one truth, that one thing you see clearly for the first time, your entire life, and 90% of the stuff that's been bothering you changes like in a nanosecond. That's powerful stuff, don't you think? You know, imagine if you could have that deal working for you, and all the other crap that's going on in your life. I mean, you've been walking around for years thinking you're okay with a problem with alcohol, which is really not even a problem, it's just a symptom of the disease. Who knows what crap and old ideas that you're absolutely sure of, that you're walking around with today, that is causing you to trip over all the furniture. And maybe one day, 20 years from now, You'll come to the thought, I need help, I can't stop this. I need help, I can't stop that. I need help, I can't stop this. And your whole life will change. And all of a sudden, the lights will go up even higher and you'll see more furniture. And things will get clear for you. Maybe things will get like real clear one day where you're not tripping over anything at all. And people are like, Lynn, just how does he do that? He just sort of like walks along and like, you know, nothing, you know, maybe that kind of stuff happens. I want to read you a few things. I got something I want to, you know, it's possible. Now here's the deal. It's possible that what you think is going on in here right now isn't what you think is going on at all. It's possible that you may not realize what's going on in here right now for another 28 years. And 28 years from now, you may realize what's going on here right now for the first time and not even realize that you're thinking about the thing I'm talking about right now. Because you're just not at that deal. Because you don't have that discernment. You're at a different deal. And I'm going to read a couple things out of this book. Just stuff I picked out. Now, I want you to notice something. There's nothing up my sleeve. You see? I got nothing here. I didn't even bring the Bible with me today. I mean, I got it up here, but I may throw something out. By the way, Paul Lee text messaged me and called me from New York. He's about to walk into the Atlantic group because he wanted to be sure that, number one, I mentioned his name. And he said he had something very important to tell you about the fifth step. You know, because he's convinced unless you hear it directly from him, you're not going to get anything about from this meeting. And so he told me two things that were extremely important and to share with you. And I told him I would, but unfortunately, I forgot them. And I hope I'm not getting this wrong, but I think it had something to do with he'll be back here in a week, and any woman who wants to share a fifth step with him, he'll be available. I hope I got that right. I don't know. I can't vouch for that. But it was something. Women were involved, and the fifth step was involved, and he was going to be back in a week. And if it wasn't right, it was all the words were right. I'm not sure that's for anything. Okay. He told me he has his. I know he has his spies here. He know by 10 o'clock what the deal was. So I'm going to read a couple of things. So I want to point out to you. I don't got this in Amy, you know. So I wanted to point out that all I got here. You see what this is? This is a big book. This is, I'm going to do this meeting using the big book. Yeah. I'm not making this shit up. This ain't going to be made up stuff. You know, this is out of the big book. Now I'm going to read some stuff. Now I know some of you are going to think that's not in the big book. You know, and you can check me out on this. I'll give you a page number and I'm going to read it. Now the reason why you're going to think it's not in there is because you never read it. Or if you read it, you didn't really hear it. Or if you heard it, you didn't understand it. Or if you understood it, you didn't like it. So it confused you. And so you forgot about it. It's like my first wife, you know, she says, you come home drunk one time, I'm going to leave you. You come home drunk one time, I'm going to leave you. You come home drunk one more time, I'm going to leave you. There's not a fat word in there. That's not an ounce of fat in that sentence. You come home drunk, I'm going to leave you. You'd have to be brain dead not to understand that. You come home drunk one more time, I'm going to leave you. I get in my car, I drive off, go to the first block, stop at the lights. I wonder what she meant by that. You know, I mean, you know, when, what's that all about? You know, listen, you know, it's the alcoholic axiom. Whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told anything he doesn't like, it confuses him. Well, this is a big book. It says in the big book, many of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was what? Nil. And so we let go, absolutely. Apparently, unless they're lying, this isn't me. You guys are chock full of old ideas. You know, I can drink like normal people. I have no problem with drinking. I don't need help quitting drinking. Drinking is not my problem. That's just one of the old ideas. That's like the first old idea. Do you understand there's like 10,000 old ideas that you got to get rid of in order to really rocket in the fourth dimension of existence? And the first one is the I can't stop drinking. That's the first old idea. The only thing you graduate to after you get rid of the first old idea is working on the next 1,000. That's what's holding you down. Most of which you don't even know you have. Because the alcoholic is an extreme example of self will run riot. Though he usually doesn't think so. You know, our disease centers in our mind, not our body. It's not about drinking, it's about thinking. It's all about thinking. You've never had a bad minute in your life, sober, where it wasn't preceded by a whole lot of thought. And here's the problem, you can't stop it. That's the real problem. You can't stop doing it. You can't stop it. You can't stop thinking. So, but there may be a way of stopping. There may be a way of getting rid of self. You know, when you're thinking, all you're thinking about is yourself. I don't care what you're thinking about. I don't care what you tell me. If you're an alcoholic and you're disturbed and you're talking to me about you. It may sound you're talking to me about me, or you're talking to me about your aunt or your cousin, but I know what you're talking about. You're talking about you. because it's all about you. You know, you may say, I want to tell you about my brother, but it's really about what your brother's doing to you, or how he's affecting you, or how he's affecting your mother who's affecting you. You know, you may be talking about your boss, but you may be talking about the President of the United States, but I don't know it's about you, because somehow, some way, this all traces back down to how this is affecting your life. It's all about you. And you know what it says in the big book? It says there's no way of getting rid of you. And you know what it says? It says we gotta get rid of this. We do, or it kills us. And it seems impossible. You know what he said? He says, we had to have God's help. I need help. I can't stop drinking. I need help. I can't stop thinking. How do you get rid of that deal? So I'm going to read a couple things out of this book. And that's what the fourth and fifth step is about. It's about discernment. Discernment has to do with getting clear about stuff. And when I throw in the word prophecy, it's because when you are clear, side effects of becoming clear about yourself and other people and being able to see things, maybe things that other people can't see, is you can prophesize then. Old Testament prophet, you know what a prophet is. A prophet is somebody who knows what's going to happen in the future. Well, you get clear in this deal, you know what's going to happen in the future. You can see things. You can see what's going to happen and where things are going to turn out and how things are going to turn out. You can meet people and you sort of like know what's going to happen to them. I mean, it's not like you tell them. I do tell them. They don't believe me. I say, you're going to drink. I'm not going to drink. I said, you're going to drink. I'm not going to drink. And now, you know, a year later, I remember doing it. He says, what happened? He says, I drank. He says, you were right. How did you know that? He says, no. Just I can see the furniture. Everything, things are clear to me. You know, they weren't clear to you, it was clear to me. I could see the attitude, I could hear the voice, I heard the statement, I understood what was going on. You thought you knew what was going on, I actually did know what was going on. I could see those neurons flapping and what was going on. So I'm going to read this thing, a couple of things from, this has to do with the fifth step. Now, in a sense, it's not classic, it is fifth step stuff. It's all sorts of steps, whatever step you're on. There'll be something that fits in here, but I want to read this. This is on page 70. Interesting. And then I'm going to move on to some other things. And then I want to tell you a story, a little testimony about something in my life, which has to do with discernment, has to do with changing your life, has to do with old ideas, has to do with fifth step or sharing with another human being, bringing another human being. You know, if we didn't have the fifth step, this could be a correspondence course. We wouldn't need people at all. It's just me and God and that's it, but apparently that's not God's plan. Not my plan. My plan is I keep it all to myself. Nobody knows nothing. Except the bullshit. So, in this book, this is on page 70, this is the last paragraph in how it works. Right after you've done the fourth step. So we're now finished the fourth step, we're going into the fifth step. And this basically sums up what's going on. Okay? Now you understand, my position here on this. This is just my position. I think it's put from the book. This is all about your relationship with God. You know, it says there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I think they were serious. That's what we say at every meeting. It says the three things you got to understand is you're powerless. That you have to understand three ideas is that you can't manage your own life. That means you can't manage your own life. That means you're an alcoholic. You can't manage your own life. You know, which is basically what you guys have been doing for the last gazillion years. Yeah, ever since you've been born, you've been trying to control, manage, push, shove, figure out. I know everybody in this room has figured out what will make them happy. Everybody in this room has figured out what would make them happy. You figured it out a million times and you've gone through it, for it, and you've gotten it. I know the gals think a guy will make them happy. I know the guys think a gal will make them happy. I know everybody thinks a new car will make them happy and money will make them. I know we all have it all figured out and you all went after it. And let me tell you something. You did a damn good job. I want to congratulate you. And y'all, you threw people under the bus, you know, you burned people alive, you ripped out people's hearts, you prostituted yourselves. There isn't a group of people that made a better try of sacrificing every moral fiber they have in their life to get what they thought they needed than you guys. That's why I love you so much. You know what I mean? I got that warm and fuzzy feeling being around you. But let me tell you something. Here's the deal. I want to point out something to you. I don't want to hurt your feelings. It didn't work. It didn't work, you see. It worked for a nanosecond and then it was off to the races again. It never worked. What you thought you needed and wanted never worked. It never, listen, don't you understand? It never worked. Now you came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you got sober, and here's what's going on. You're thinking of the same shit. Nothing's changed. You're in Alcoholics Anonymous, you got sober, and you're thinking exactly the way you thought before you came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the booze isn't even the problem. It's the way you're thinking is the problem. It's what you're focused on is the problem. This book is trying to get you to focus upon God. Not material things, not physical things, but your relationship with Him. And the only thing you can think about and talk about and worry about and bitch about and call up your sponsor about is Him, her, them, it, money. And you just can't understand why you don't feel so good. When you think you're doing everything, and you're not really doing anything, all you're doing is like going to meetings. It's like going to, see, for you, it's like going to the bar, but just not drinking. Talking to the same people about the same shit. Same sort of conversation. Same topics of conversation. About the same stuff. Seemingly staying sober, so that's what you really think is the linchpin, and it is a big important thing. My sponsor used to say, because we have to understand this is progress, not perfection. If you go to the end of the day and you haven't had a drink today, you're a winner no matter what's going on. But the truth is, when you're talking about emotional and spiritual sobriety and about growing up and putting away childish things, there's some stuff that we got to get involved in, some old ideas that are a little bit deeper. You know, they call in the Bible, they have this line. We have the same sort of line in the big book. They talk about a certain type of religion. They, you know, false religion. They said it was a form of religion without power. It's a form of AA without power. People stay physically sober, but mentally and emotionally, they live lives of quiet desperation. You know, they stay physically sober, they pick up the chips, but every once in a while they think it would be a good idea to blow their brains out. Because they're not happy about their sobriety. They talk about it in the book. Every once and again, you know, guy says, feel better, look better, have a better time. We left such salad, we know that he'll try the old game again because he's not happy about his sobriety. Soon he will wish for the end. Because he's bored and he's restless and he's filled with self-pity, worldly sorrow. So let me read page 70 right here. And I want to give a little testimony about something that happened in my life. Okay, page 70. In this book, this is right after the fourth step. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. He says, we're alcoholic, we can't manage our own lives. No human power could relieve their alcoholism. Okay, let me tell you what that means. Let me just boil it down for you. Okay, you know all the stuff you think about it? You know all the stuff you think about every day? Stop thinking about it. It can't help. It can't save you. As a matter of fact, it's the problem. The problem is you're thinking about it. The more you think about it, the worse it's going to get. No human power could relieve your alcoholism. You know all those people you're thinking about? Stop thinking about them. They can't help. As a matter of fact, they're hurting the deal. You're thinking about them as part of the problem. Stop thinking about them. But God could and would if he was sought. Here's the deal. In AA, if you think about God and you think about your relationship with God, that's the key. The key is to do whatever you can, get with whoever you can, associate with whoever you can, build a fellowship around you, whatever you can, because you crave fellowship. You crave companionship, but you make sure whatever you crave and whatever you get around you, it somehow promotes your relationship with God. If it promotes your relationship with God, stick with it. If it doesn't, run away from it. That's the deal. Now, you don't have to believe it. You know, I'm just talking about if you read the big book and you understand what they're saying. Here you go. In this book, you know, what does it say? See that your relationship with him is riding great events will come past you. And job or no job, wife or wife, no wife, it doesn't matter. But no alcoholic say that he has to have this in order or that in order to. It says nonsense. It says, as long as we trust God and clean house, our defense against alcohol, our clarity, what happens to us, depends upon our relationship with God. That's the whole book. That's what it's about. That's why it says, see to it. That's why it says, there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. That's why when it pushes you all through the steps, you finally get to the 11th step. It says, okay, now you found him, now increase your relationship with him. And then go out and tell people about that. That's what the program's all about. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. If you look at those promises that are read at every meeting, it says a new freedom, right? A new freedom. We walk through the archway of freedom. How do we get through that archway of freedom? How do we get freedom? Freedom from fear. Freedom from fear of people. A new freedom, a new happiness. It goes through all these things that we get. You know, fear, free of fear. Are we going to be financially insecure? No. Are we going to be scared? No. We're going to lose the fear of financial insecurity. Fear of people. It says, we will finally know that what God is doing for us, that we're doing for us, that God is doing for us. We could not, he's the one who's doing the transformation. He's the one who put that thing in your mind in the first place. I need help. I can't stop drinking. When you were in charge, going to the psychiatrist, running around, trying to figure it out, you were getting worse and worse and worse. Then one day things got so bad, just like the prodigal son, you sat there in your shit. You said, my life is over. I might as well die. And all of a sudden it occurred to you, I think I have a drinking problem. And you thought that up. You were thinking for 20 years, you couldn't figure that one out. You sat down, you shut up, you said, I'm going to die, you know, my life is over, and all of a sudden it occurred to you, I need help, I can't stop drinking. You say, how brilliant I am. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. Now, I'm going to tell you a little secret. There are people in AA walking around these rooms, talking, sharing at meetings. They're talking to you that aren't convinced. They got long-term sobriety. They're not convinced. They don't even want to be convinced. They're not willing to be convinced. They don't believe in this at all. They don't believe it's true. Through a million different artifices, and we're really good at this, they'll look for every loophole, and I'm an attorney, I'm looking for a loophole, to figure out why this doesn't mean what it said. They'll do what I did to my first wife. I wonder what she meant by that. What do they mean by that? You know what I mean? Something that's absolutely clear, they'll make fuzzy. And since you're an alcoholic, and you want to be in charge of your life, and you want to be in control, you'll gravitate towards those people. You'll want that to be true for you. Because if it isn't true, because if the book is right, then that means you have to change. And you have to do more. And you don't want to change. As much as you hate the way you are right now, you're scared of going to another place. Just like you were scared of stopping drinking, like your life was going to be over. When your great life is waiting right down the street. He's got it all planned out for you. You just won't go. We hope that you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you from him. If you have already made a decision, and you know what decision they're talking about? We're going to talk about this. If you already made a decision, that third step decision, and an inventory of your gross or handicapped, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big truth, big chunks of truth about yourself. That decision is set forth here. A few pages forward, it says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He's the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. Now listen, some people come in here and they say, well, that's too simple. It is. They say it. Most good ideas are simple. Some people are too stupid to get simple ideas. Or maybe they're just too bright to get simple ideas. They don't understand you come home drunk more time I'm leaving you. It's just too simple. And that's why they'll never be able to stay married. That's why they can never have a decent relationship. That's why they can't stop drinking. Because they can't understand words like, you come home drunk more time I'm leaving you. It's just too complex or simple. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the key. Listen, I don't know whether you believe in this stuff or not. It doesn't really matter. But understand something. The reason we were kicked out of the garden is because God said, don't eat the apple. And Eve said, I wonder what he meant by that. And that's on our asses out of the garden. So the whole history of man is not understanding the simple stuff. This has been going on for a long time. Believe me. Alcoholism just didn't develop overnight. You got to read Ecclesiastes. You understand what I'm talking about. King Solomon, supposed to be a bright guy. I'll tell you all about it. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch. Arch, A-R-C-H. This is the keystone of the new arch through which we pass to freedom. To freedom. That freedom stuff. You want to get that stuff. Into action says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude. Did you know you were trying to get a new attitude? Did you know it says a new relationship with our Creator? With a capital C. Now, I know you can fill in whatever you want for our creator. I don't say, I mean, you could put in doorknob. You could say, well, I was created by a doorknob. And say the people that believe in Jesus are stupid. I believe in doorknobs. You know, you could do that, you know, that sounds better. I mean, you could say whatever you want to say. You understand what I'm saying? The point is no question they're talking about a deity here. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our creator, and to discover the obstacles in our past. Now these are about to be cast out. These are the old ideas. We're going to cast them out. This requires action on our part. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. This brings us to the fifth step and the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. Then after you take the step, it says this, and I want to tell a little story. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Okay, now listen. In this book, what they're doing now, in my opinion, is describing to you what's going to happen to you if you do this thing seriously. If it's not happening to you, there's a possibility that you're not doing this thing seriously. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, there's two reasons why that, there may be more than two reasons, but two reasons I can think of why this isn't happening. Of course, you may not be at that place. You know, you may not, we all have our places and times when we do these things. You know, we'll serve the wine for a time. You know, I mean, if you're 2 days sober, 1 day sober, you're not necessarily at the place I'm talking about right now. You know, but if you've been here for a while and it's just not working out, maybe you're not taking this thing seriously. And maybe the reason is because you've never done the step before the steps. You know, there's a step before the step. It says if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not really ready to take. Maybe you started taking the steps by rote because you're here and because we're alcoholics, we're pretty compliant. You know, we want to belong to the group, but you don't really want what we have. And so you're not really ready to go to any lengths to get it. What you're doing is you're just ready to sort of blend in and be accepted and be able to talk the talk, but not really do the deal. But, and that's okay. You can hang around there for 30 years and pick up chips and everything. You're just not going to get this stuff out of it. So if you're not getting this stuff out of it, maybe it's because you're not willing to do it because you don't really want it. But if you want this stuff, it's available to you. Because rarely have they seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed their path. So this is what you're supposed to be experiencing. Listen to what they're saying. Once we have taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. That feeling, the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. You feel that way? Then you ought to think about that. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. Why don't you think about that? For we are building an arch. Remember that arch thing? For we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement, put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? In vision for you, the last chapter on the last page, it says the following. It says, he will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Did you know you crave fellowship? If you're an alcoholic, if you're in here, you crave fellowship. You hate being alone. You crave fellowship. You're going to fellowship. You're going to fellowship with imaginary people in your brain. Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. You're going to fellowship with the lap dancer down at the titty bar, guys. You're going to fellowship with some real nasty people. Don't think for a second that you won't worship something or someone or fellowship with somebody or something or someone. You are a craveaholic, personaholic, looking for somebody to latch on to. Something to latch on to. And what you're looking to latch on to is a bad thing. You got like a bad picker. You're looking to latch on to a car, a guy, a gal, a person. You're looking on to latch on to something that will never fulfill you. That will only give you pleasure for a minute. That will always disappoint. When the one thing that you need to latch on to that will never disappoint, which is talked about in this book, you're scared to deal with. That's the deal. That's the nature of this disease. That's the problem, and that's the solution. It says, you know, he says, God is going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You know something? This isn't a secret. This book isn't a secret. These words I'm reading are not secret. This is not hidden stuff. If this stuff is new for you, or you're hearing for the first time, it's because that's how serious this disease is. This is a disease where you can put the answers in neon lights, have people come here and talk about it, they can scream from the rafters, and you'll walk out and say, I wonder what he meant by that. That's how badly you're scared to do it. Because it means a drastic change of your lifestyle. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you do each day if a man is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great. Events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. This is the great fact for us. You know what it is? Abandon yourself to God. Does it say, think about God once in a while, go to a meeting? It says, abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellow. Tell him what's really going on. Have a godly conversation, not a bullshit conversation. Have a godly conversation. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. You know, the interesting thing about godly, you know, you could sit in a bar and talk for 5 hours drinking about everything that's going on in your life and not get anything from it and get worse and worse and worse and get depressed and destroy a marriage. And you can have a godly conversation with somebody for a nanosecond and your whole life will change. Did you know that? I know it because I've experienced that. You can have a person come to your life that you've never seen before, never known before, says one word to you, and your entire life changes. Your entire life changes. You could be running around the planet trying to look for her, look for him, look for that, have conversations. You could talk to a psychiatrist for 10 years. Take the Xanax, do whatever you want to do, and nothing changes. It seems to get good, but it's getting worse. And you could have one conversation one day with a total stranger for a nanosecond. He could look at you and say one word, and your entire life will change. It's true, because it's happened to me in AA. Happens all the time. Happens in AA all the time. And if you don't believe that, don't worry about it, because it won't really involve you, and it'll never happen to you anyway. This stuff is only for believers, so don't even worry about it. Non-believers, just, you know, give me a little slack here and don't even worry about this deal. It's all bullshit. So I need to tell you a little story. About 20 years ago, you know, I'm an attorney and I was representing a young man. I'm not going to use names here. I'm going to use one guy's name. He's deceased, a wonderful man named Father Al Grau. He was a Jesuit priest, many years sobriety, 30-plus, 35 years, 40 years sobriety when he died. He was the director of the Pompeii Institute, and he was a hero. He was a prisoner of war by the Japanese. He was a psychologist, and he was a Jesuit priest. I mean, he was, you know, I mean, as high up on the food chain as you can get as far as somebody who was respected in this program. And about 20 years ago, now I'm 28 years sober, so I had about 7 years sober, I went to a retreat that he was conducting. Now, I didn't really want to go to the retreat because I had 8 years and I was busy, you know? And, I mean, cause I had 8 years. I didn't really need that, you know? And, because I was already well. You understand what I'm saying? I was well. I was sober. I was well. I was doing step meetings. I just had, you know, problems, you know? I just had problems, you know? You know, money, things, you know, problems. You know, I had to deal with life, you know? You know, I didn't really like need any extra work, you know, on myself or anything. I mean, I knew I did. I would never say that in a meeting. You know, I mean, you know, get rid of some old ideas and stuff, but nothing serious. And so I took a case where a kid had been charged with dealing in or selling to an undercover agent a couple of kilos of cocaine. And it was in Broward County. Now, there may be somebody here old enough or involved in the legal system will understand what I'm talking about here. In the state of Florida, if you sell over 400 grams of cocaine, it's a 15-year mandatory minimum, up to 30 years. I mean, you could be the judge's son. You know what I mean? You're going to wait for 15 years mandatory minimum. That's it. Adios. So this young man comes into my office. I'll call him Vince. And he's with his father and his mother, who are professors at some sort of college somewhere. And he is in a room where one of these deals is going on. He's like 19 or 20 years old. And he's there with his girlfriend, fiance, and their little baby. And the deal's going down, and he's charged with this deal, okay? He's facing 15 years to 30 years. 15, you know, he's going away at 15 years. And it's like he's selling to undercover agents. You understand what I'm saying? They're nice, like a nice kid, clean-cut kid, you know? He's just happened to be there, and there's an explanation for it. I'm not going to bore you with it, but... In any event, I mean, we bored the jury with it, but I mean, I'm not going to bore you guys with it. But, you know, and they paid me a bunch of money at the time. It was a lot of money at the time. And it fell before a judge up here who's dead now. His name was Dan Futch. Now, I don't know how many people know of or heard of Dan Futch. You'd walk into Dan's office, you know. I didn't know him that well. You know, I was mostly a Dade County guy. I walked into Dan Futch's office, and he'd be sitting down at his desk. And on his desk, he had a miniature electric chair that lit up. Now let me tell you something. The life of a trial attorney is not easy. Even with a lot of meetings, you know what I mean? There's some stressful shit going on. And, you know, I had a lot of stuff like that in my lifetime doing this deal. But, so it was, and it got bad from there. It got bad from there. That was the good part. It got bad from there. And, there was, and here's what happened. There was no question in my mind. There was no question in my mind that this kid was gone. Because, you know, even though it was a minimum 15 up to a maximum 30, you understand what I'm saying? Like most judges would probably give him, okay, I gotta give you the 15. Okay, you got 15 or 15. Like Futch, you know, you go to trial with Futch, you're getting 30, 60. You're getting whatever, you're getting the max. You're maxing out. That's the end of your life. And what's even worse is I'm a young attorney is they come into my office. Now I know they're going away. I know it's obvious. There's no way I'm saving this guy. I'm doing the best I can. I'm going through my emotions, but I mean, you know. And I'd say, I want to talk to you about your case. And they would say something like this. Clients will tend to do this to you. People will do this to you. And he sits in and says, oh, no, we don't even want to know. We're not even worried. We have complete faith in you. So that's the deal. And I'm an alcoholic and I'm going to AA meetings. I'm a good attorney, I mean, but I mean, you know, I'm like, it's a difficult deal. And I could, for some reason, I couldn't share it with people at AA meetings because after all, I do have 8 years, you know, and, you know, I'm supposed to be beyond that and I'm not going to tell people I feel big, you know, I'm not going to, and you know, whatever, it, you know, pride and all that stuff. Well, I didn't know it was pride at the time. I thought it was like attorney-client privilege. I don't know what it was, you know what I mean? The bottom line is this is something that's eating me up. You understand what I mean? It's eating me up. I don't know what would eat you up. Have the responsibility for somebody's life. They say that we want to hear of it. They pay you a lot of money. They're expecting to get off. We have complete faith in you. You're going to know it. You know he's going to die. He's going to the guillotine. It's going to be your fault. I mean, I'm projecting. I feel like I have 2 days sober. And I'm walking around with this stuff and the trial date's coming up. So this is like going on for like 6 months. And, to make a long story short, this thing he was running, this retreat is coming. So I somehow wind up in this retreat. I think my sponsor made me go or something. Cause I didn't have time for that. I had to work on this case. I had some important things going on. And so this, I went to this retreat and it was being run by this guy, Al Ground. You know, like 35 years sober, you know, PhD, you know, the whole bit, PhD, psychologist. So I'm looking at this guy. This is one of the beautiful things about AA, really, is that you come in contact, you know, it's one thing to come in contact with one of these bar leeches that are really selfish and they don't give a crap about you. But when, you know, the people out there that want to drag us down. But AA allows you to come in contact with people that really want to lift you up. You know, people that are really, can be balcony people or resources to you. So I come in contact with this guy, Al Graham, and I had faith. Now, I'm not saying I have faith like, you know, maybe the kind of faith I have now or the way we talk about faith in church, but I had the modicum, the rudiments of faith in this program, and the people in this program, and the individuals in this program of faith that I somehow knew or believed that were people in here, there's a program in here that could help me. Now, I'd already done the fifth step. While I'd done the fourth step, you know what I mean? But I had this thing was killing me. It was eating me alive, eating my liver, you know? And I'll tell you what, one of the things you find out in here, you're going to walk into the AA with stuff going on in your life that isn't even bothering you, isn't even hurting you. You're not even thinking about it on day one. And at 10 years sober, it's going to be eating your liver and you're not going to know what to do with it. And you're going to find that you had this stuff going on 20 years ago, and you didn't even know it, just like the booze. And so we're going to go a little bit over here. You guys can handle it. So this one is stopping. I'll tell you the rest of the story next week. Okay, so we go up, and he says, and Al Grouse says, now if any of you want to see, I don't know how many people have been to a retreat, but the retreat master, he says, now if any of you want to see me, after, you know, for a private conversation, like a fifth step kind of thing, confession type of deal, whatever the heck it is, you know, and I'm going to tell you what sort of went on in the confession. I'm not Catholic, so it's not like I'm breaking, but I'm going to tell you the deal. So he says, you come and see me. So I'm like jumping at this deal because I say, now this guy is going to help me with this. I can talk to this guy. He'll take it to his grave. He's like 35 years sober, you know, next to Jesus, he's the guy. You know what I mean? There ain't war hero, PhD, and he's like the whole thing wrapped up in the one. You know what I mean? So I put my name on the list. So the time comes, I'm waiting to go in there. I'm like, I'm dying to like take a shit. I mean, it's like when you gotta go to the bathroom. I can't wait to dump on this guy. So.
Wow.
He's gonna take it all away, you know? Take all my sins away. Everything's gonna be wonderful. So I walk in, and he says, hi, how are you? And I start telling him exactly what I'm telling him. I represent this kid. He's a young kid. He's got a baby. He's got a wife. They got people selling cocaine, a kilo, 15 years. Dan Futch, the whole bit. I start telling him. And he says, he stops me. And he says, hey. He says, look. He says, I'm not really the guy that you need to talk to about this. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like coitus interruptus, man. You know what I mean? He's like... I'm not, look it up. He says, I'm not really the guy you need to talk to here. I'm the wrong guy. You know? You know what alcohol's like? I used to be on the alcoholic hotline. No, you gotta listen to me. You gotta listen to me, you know? The worst thing he says, no, I don't. He's going, no, I'm not gonna hear this crap. No, I don't wanna hear. No, no, wait a second. My whole life has gotten me to this point. It's like I'm being, he says, no, no, I'm the wrong guy. He says, no, you are the guy. No, I'm the wrong guy. So I keep on, you're the guy, you're the guy, you're the guy. So finally, I'm like, I beat him into submission, you know? He was like 78 years old at the time. He's getting ready to step off the planet, you know? This is his last. He said, I can't fight this kid. So he said, okay. So I finished up. I said, ah, nah, nah. And they trust me and what's going to happen. He's going to go away and blah, blah. And so he's saying, and he says, okay, you're done? I said, I warn you, this isn't pretty. I said, sure, I'm done. Yeah, I'm done. I'm done. And he said, I said, what do you think? He says, what do I think? He said, I said, yeah, what do you think? He says, you want to know what I think? I said, yeah, I want to know what you think. He says, well, I'll tell you what I think. I think you're full of shit. This is a joke. Now, listen, I don't know much about Catholics, Roman Catholicism. I've never been to confession. I don't do a lot of priest things, everything. But somehow in the back of my mind, I like wasn't expecting that. You know what I mean? I thought you'd get like three Hail Marys and go, you know, do something, pray to a rosary or something. You know, and he starts laying into me. That was the good part. You represent drug dealers, what kind of person you are, I mean, you're disgusting, you know, this is terrible, these guys, I mean, he went nuts. And then he started telling me about how he works in this hospital, and all he deals with is his crack babies and cocaine babies, and he says, and you're representing people that are dealing this stuff, and you should be ashamed of you, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm doing a legitimate thing, I'm trying to tell him my problem, and the guy's, he's like, I'm like going nuts here. This guy's like over, because he is an alcoholic, he's like overreacting. He says, he really is pounding me. But he's trying to give me a rationalization, like, you know, how could you represent me, you know, how could you do this? This guy, I don't feel sorry for this guy. Well, he should go away for a million years and blah, blah, blah. And you know, as he's doing it, I see he's sort of like, in a sense, sort of calming down, you know. I mean, and he's starting to get to the point, he says, if this guy had gone through with the deal and made the money and gone through the deal, he wouldn't even be in your office. The only reason he's in, he continued to do it. The only reason he's in is your office is because he got caught. He says, if he goes away, it's not your fault. It's because he's guilty and he should go away. You didn't, you know, he starts going on and on and on. And then he finally keeps on calming down and keeps on going on and on and on. And he says, and then he ends up, he finally gets to the point where he gets sober again. I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't sober throughout the time, but I mean, he was angry at first. You know what I mean? And he ends up like, most good sponsors end up like, go with God, son, you know? One of those deals, you know, where he eviscerates you, beats the crap out of you, tells you you're full of shit, tells you why you're full of shit, and this is now go with God, you know what I mean? I love you, you know? So I walk out the door, and I am like, I mean, I walked in there, this guy was going to give me the answer, he was going to be my psychiatrist, he was going to be my rabbi. I had been to see the psychiatrist. I had been to psychiatrists for years. None of them had ever said, you know, I think you're full of shit. You know, I mean, I knew that wasn't right. I'm thinking, what kind of guy is this? You know, what kind of person is this? What kind of man would do that? He says he's got 35 years. He forced himself as like an AA guru. I'm going back and forth. Somebody ought to write the Pope, you know, burn down his house, kill his dog, you know, whatever it is. I'm thinking, I'm bumping into people on the way going to my room. And I'm saying, I said, don't go. That priest is crazy. You know? Don't see that guy. You don't want to see that guy, you know. And I go to my room, and you ever have, and I'm sure you have, something happened to you that just steams you and upsets you, and you're disappointed, and you just can't get out. Your brain is going, it's like on fire. A million miles. He said this, and I said that, and, you know, he should have done this, and you're going crazy. And so I sat down on my bed. It's a little bed. It was like a crucifix right above it, and I'm just sitting there. That's the only thing in the room, a bed and a crucifix on a chair. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking about what he's saying. I'm thinking about, and as I'm thinking, now I had done the fourth step, and I had done the fifth step before. And you know, the spiritual axiom of the fourth step and the tenth step is whenever you're upset, no matter what the problem is, there's something wrong with you. And I had done all the steps. They were all part of my life, you know. And sometimes, whether you're thinking of things or not, there's stuff working on in the background. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking about, I'm doing the alcoholic thing. You know, kill him, rape him, slice him, you know, he's wrong, he's right, who should I report? That's not fair, it's not right, I don't know, he's wrong, you know, why me, you know, that shouldn't have happened, that was unfair. You know, I'm doing the whole alcoholic deal. You know, with every fiber of my being, with every voice in my building, me, why, you know, and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden a thought crossed my mind. You know, this thought would never cross my mind if I was drinking. And this thought certainly wouldn't have crossed my mind if I hadn't been working the steps or involved in the program. And this is the thought that crossed my mind, like in a nanosecond, a wild thought. You know what the thought was? Maybe he's right. I don't even know where it came from. It was like, I need help, I can't stop drinking. It was like, came from like Zululand. It came from Pluto. I think that's why it took so long. It was coming in from Pluto. Went around Saturn, you know, and shot through my brain. Maybe he's right. And, you know, when that thought comes in, it sort of stops it. And then all of a sudden, the next thought I had was, he is right. This has nothing to do with me. And here's what happened. That thing that had been bothering me for 6 months left like that, never to come back in. It changed my entire life. It changed how I dealt with clients. It changed how I dealt with people. It changed, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it never happened again, but rarely, if ever, do I feel guilty about other people and their mistakes. Rarely, if ever, do I accept responsibility. You know, it changed my whole way of being able to deal with people and being able to do my job. You know, and somehow like it's my fault or I don't accept it. I don't accept the bullshit. They come into my office and they say, we know you can help me. I said, well, that's great, because I think you're going to jail for the rest of your life. Because they got enough evidence to put you there, and you'll be lucky if you don't get there. I just won't accept the bullshit. So this is about you and what you did and blah, 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 and the only reason you're here, and I understood that deal. And you know something? It's because a Catholic priest, you know, endowed with this program, with the Holy Spirit working, instead of giving me the psychobabble, looked at me with what most people would say, well, you don't say that to people, and said, I think you're full of shit. That's what a godly conversation with discernment from an alcoholic working these steps will do. It'll change the way you deal with people, the way you think about yourself. It'll change the problem with people pleasing and dependency and worrying about what people think. Like that. That's what I used to drink booze for. I used to drink booze to forget what people were saying about me. I used to drink booze. I used to walk in a bar and I wanted to belong to the group. I'd take a couple shots of booze. I thought I owned the group. I mean, that's what a conversation like that, the lights went on, the furniture became clear. All of a sudden I was able to walk and talk again. That's what freedom, that's what these steps will do for you. That's what the transparency of talking to another human being, not the kind of talk, you know, I could have talked about that problem in a bar with other alcoholic attorneys until the cows come home. And you know, they would have said to me, let me tell you what they said. Oh, you're a good guy. Or are you okay? Well, therefore, they would have told me all the things I wanted to hear. They would have been my best, and I would have told everybody, these are my best friends. And not one of them would have said I was full of shit. They would have said, hey, I'm buying you another drink. And it wouldn't have gone away. And a guy who said to me the one thing I didn't want to hear saved my life. And all we're doing in here is running away from people who are telling us stuff we don't want to hear. Because we're scared it might hurt us or hurt our feelings or things like that. By the way, I won the case. Another meeting, that's another story for another time. Thank you very much.